Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I think Mother Earth wants far less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Dr. Kyra Newmoff-Shields. She's an environmental health scientist who is the Bright Cities Program Director at Healthy Babies Bright Futures. Thank you so much for being my guest today on What Mama Wants.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
So what can you tell us about Healthy Babies Bright Futures? What are you guys all about?
Well, thank you so much for having me here today, Kate. Healthy Babies Bright Futures was formed in 2016 with a group of scientists, health practitioners, and funder. And our goal really is to reduce the neurotoxic exposures that have the strongest evidence for causing a neurodevelopmental delay.
Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, can you say more about what neurotoxic exposures are and what they might look like on a daily basis?
We center ourselves around this consensus that things like heavy metals, air pollutants, pesticides, and certain endocrine disruptors pose really serious and consequential threats to these early stages of brain development in all of our kids. So basically that means harming the developing brain so that kids born with a neurodevelopmental delay can suffer from things like ADHD, ADD, autism, or other learning disorders.
Wow. I'm really excited about the work Healthy Babies Bright Futures is doing, empowering action to reduce exposures to neurotoxins.
We have two ways that we seek to reduce these neurotoxic exposures. One is through research, and we've done a lot of research on the contaminants in baby food. The second way that we try to impact this problem is pragmatically on the ground in supporting cities through capacity building, training, and grant funding to tailor neurotoxic exposure reduction strategies that make the most sense in their community. We try to engage people through research, grant making, and capacity building. And the people that I'm speaking of are parents, city governments, and corporate partners to highlight these health risks. And this is a very important and, share pragmatic and effective ways to avoid these invisible neurotoxic exposures that are often present in our everyday experiences.
Well, thank you.
And I just wanted to bring up a point that it's really interesting today that in many respects, our children are much better off than they were 100 years ago, right? We're living longer, healthier lives, and we have less disease than at any time in history. And this is because of vaccines, healthy food, and clean drinking water, and a variety of other things. But there are two negative things that kind of threaten to overshadow this progress that we've made. And the first is these tens of thousands of chemicals that have been, you know, disseminated and used in our world. As you know, there are millions of consumer products, and some, including some that you've talked about already on the show, are very persistent and will remain in our soil and water really for generations. Surveys conducted here in the US by our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention routinely find more than 200 chemicals in the bodies of all Americans, surprisingly sometimes even in the breast milk of nursing mothers and in the umbilical cord blood of newborn infants.
That's what actually got me interested in toxics in the first place. I was a therapist and I read that study about cord blood. And we used to think cord blood was protected by that placental barrier. And then we found out there were 200 chemicals. Not like it's good for anybody, but what happens when, you know, we've been eating off of Teflon pans and heating up things in plastic and breathing polluted air as a pregnant mother? What happens then?
Right. You bring up an important point that children are vulnerable because their immune systems aren't as fully equipped as adults to handle these toxic exposures. They're eating more per pound than adults, and so they're actually ingesting and having a higher exposure. And so it is really fascinating how our brain develops, right? There's, I think, according to the Harvard Center on the Developing Child, like 1 million new neural connections per second. And that's really the foundation of our future, right? The development of your brain. And so when you have these chemicals interfering with that brain development, it really has lifelong consequences.
Yeah. I like saying healthy babies, bright futures. It's fun to say. And I think it's fun to say because babies is fun to say. And I think it's fun to say babies because they're amazing. They're amazing and they're little humans and they cannot protect themselves. And so I love thinking of them having bright futures. Good job on naming your organization.
Well, so do I, because I think all of us want bright futures, even if we don't have kids, for the kids in our life. And, if that picture of the brain doesn't quite resonate with you, you could think about 1 in 6 American kids suffering from a neurodevelopmental delay. And it's not to say that chemical exposures are their only cause for that, but it is amongst the most preventable. And that's really why this group of scientists and practitioners came together, because there's a lot we can do today to reduce our neurotoxic exposures.
So, what are some neurotoxic exposures you're talking about?
Well, it's a little frustrating because sometimes these are chemicals that are used extensively in products that we come into contact with. So, fragrances often contain a chemical called phthalates, or we're getting pajamas for our kids and we don't know that they're treated with a flame retardant, or something that many Americans have heard about is lead, right? We have lead in our water, we have lead in our soil, we have lead in our paint. There's persistent chemicals that have been used in industry like PCBs. So our organization really focuses on 9, and they all sort of act like lead interfering with brain development that have the most evidence in the scientific literature for neurodevelopmental delays.
Those are on your website, and I saw them. And your website's really well constructed. If people want to look there for more information, can you tell us what your website is?
Oh, sure. And we encourage you to go there. It's hbbf.org. That stands for Healthy Babies, Bright Futures. And we try to have easily accessible information in English and Spanish for parents. If you just want to download a fact sheet about, well, what are some clean foods that I can feed my baby that aren't too expensive but can practically fit into my lifestyle? Or what can I share with my city to do? What can we do as a community to reduce these neurotoxic exposures? And I know I'm a mom of 3 kids, and when I was a new mom, I didn't know. And I fed my, first baby infant rice cereal like my mom had fed me, only to find out in this role that when we're feeding our little kids 3 foods, infant rice cereal, apple juice, and rice, that can account for up to 68% of their total daily exposure to arsenic, which is another potent neurotoxin. But if we simply choose to serve a right variety of foods, or avoid our rice snacks, or use another infant cereal like a whole grain cereal instead of rice, that's an easy way to protect our babies. So I hope people listen to this program and feel empowered with ways to take action, and just to have a greater understanding of where these exposures are so they can take simple steps to avoid them.
Yeah. And you have lists of things parents can do, and I will link to those in the bio of this on whatmamawants.org as well. So you mentioned that 1 in 6 children is being born now with a neurodevelopmental delay. Can you say more about that? That sounds alarming to me.
Sure. So neurodevelopmental delay could be anything from ADHD, ADD, autism, some kind of birth defect.
How does having a baby with, say, autism spectrum disorder impact that person's life, but also families and our culture as a whole, having 1 in 6 children with these kinds of issues?
Well, I'm going to switch that to ADHD because I just want to share that this issue is personal for me because my oldest son has ADHD. And my husband and I recognized this in 3rd grade, really in part to his incredibly caring teacher. He's 15 now, and he's had the benefit of 2 involved parents and hours of support services and alternative education opportunities, and he's doing amazing. But that took a lot of time and effort, and I feel grateful that we were able to do that. And I also feel very passionately that all kids, regardless of their zip code or their genetic code, should have an analogous opportunity. But as I've alluded to, the financial costs for families and society as a whole associated with these neurodevelopmental disorders really are staggering. On average, it costs twice as much in the US to educate a child with a learning or developmental disorder as it costs for a child that does not have that. And if you're looking for some data, in 2009, there was an analysis that said for every $1 spent to reduce exposures to lead, which we know is a potent neurotoxin, our society would benefit anywhere between $17 and $221 for that $1 spent. So, Kate, I think it's fair to say that the prevalence of neurodevelopmental disorders has dramatic impacts at both the individual and societal levels, and that it really would be beneficial for the children in all of our lives to take actions to reduce these exposures.
Absolutely. We need everybody to be healthy and contributing.
And all of our systems aren't really currently set up to serve a very neurodiverse population. More so, we really do need to take this seriously and do something different. And just because neurotoxins are invisible doesn't mean that they aren't with us.
Yes. So as the director of the program called Bright Cities, which is part of Healthy Babies, Bright Futures, can you explain how you can help to reduce neurotoxic exposures for pregnant women, babies, and the community at the city level? I think this is so interesting.
It's interesting and it's inspiring and joyful to work with passionate city leaders across the U.S. And, you know, cities really have a unique and critical role to play in reducing these neurotoxic exposures for pregnant people and babies, as for the community at large. And why? Well, because cities are often just more versatile, right? They can implement change more quickly and decisively than a state or national government. So they really are critical partners in our work to protect babies' developing brains. And I'm so proud to say that right now we have about 40 cities in our Bright Cities network, including four shining examples from Maine and New England. So South Portland, Maine, and Providence, Rhode Island have implemented really truly like savvy and community inspired resilience and pesticide reduction programs. And then Salem and Lynn, Massachusetts have driven creative strategies to increase organic produce production and sharing in their communities. And again, we love people to go to our website because we have a lot of case studies. And so if you're interested in learning more, we have the case studies and blogs that share this work at hbbf.org.
Thank you. Yeah, when I was a therapist, I saw people individually, and it's so much work to take care of these problems individually, and it's often out of people's price range. But as a city, that's going upstream. That's treating everybody better and keeping everyone healthier.
Yeah, and often these activities have so many spillover effects. We had a young mother from Salem, Massachusetts, just kind of reflecting on her experience. And this project in Salem was called the Mac Park Food Farm. And they started it during the pandemic. And she was just delighted to have a way to engage outside in a safe way, but still feel connected and inspired, especially during a time that was challenging for all of us.
And that project helped people to have access to organic food.
That's right. It's really unique in that it's both a working municipal food farm and a community food forest. That was the first time I was introduced to a food forest. And the concept is they have their garden, and around that they've planted fruit bearing and nut bearing trees, so that down the line, their vision was for community members to, you know, come at their leisure or when they wanted to harvest what was of interest to them. And it's a really a neat model. The then mayor, Kim Driscoll, and the city leaders just showed a lot of leadership in bringing this project to the city. And it's definitely been around a couple years now. And this last year, the volunteers were able to harvest 6,000 pounds of organic produce from this garden. And they also shared the food with their food pantry, the Salem Pantry, to get food out to community members that couldn't come to the garden. And I was just thrilled to learn that not only are they doing all this food harvesting, but new improvements to their property last year included a solar-powered shed, a walk-in cooler, a water catchment system, and an ADA-accessible path picnic area and parking lot. And all of this was built on an unused baseball field in Salem. And as I travel to these bright cities to help kickstart their projects or build relationships, you know, any city you go to, you'll see vacant land, right? And so I just think, well, what a wonderful model. And that's what Salem wants. And that's what we want, is just copy this, put it in your city, learn from this experience so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel and create a habitat healthier for our children and our pollinators.
It's a wonderful model. It's really exciting. And, you know, Salem's not just for witches anymore. Which city is really cool, and that's really a progressive thing they're doing.
Very cool.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Dr. Kyra Newmoff-Shields. She's an environmental health scientist who is the Bright Cities Program Director at Healthy Babies Bright Futures, a project focused on protecting developing brains from toxic exposures for the health of the whole community. I know that Healthy Babies Bright Futures has been in the news lately about heavy metals that make their way into baby food. And can you help us understand that a little bit better?
Sure. So our research team is led by Jane Houlihan, and she instigated a series of studies on the contaminants in baby food because there's been reports, actually, Kate, of heavy metals in baby food over the last decade. So we did a study in 2019 that actually tested more brands, both organic and non-organic baby foods, and also provided first ever estimates of population-wide decline in IQ from children's exposure to lead and arsenic in food, and also provided advice for parents. And the results of the study, we found that 95% of the baby foods that we tested contain toxic chemicals that lower a baby's IQ. So now, if you're a parent or you have kids in your life, you're thinking, well, what does this really mean for baby's health? Well, these chemicals that were found in the baby food, arsenic, lead, cadmium, and mercury, they're all neurotoxins that can permanently alter our developing brains, erode IQ, and impact behavior.
Where are those neurotoxins coming from?
Well, these four harmful metals are found in all food, not just baby food. They can occur naturally in soils or from pollution in the environment. So what happens is that the crops then absorb these metals from the soil and water. They're even found in organic soils. And then the presence in baby food, of course, raises unique concerns because the babies are more sensitive to these toxic impacts.
Wow. So what's a parent to do who wants to feed their children pure food?
Yeah. Well, there is a lot that parents can do. And really the bottom line is serving a variety of foods so that you're not accidentally feeding something that's contaminated and increasing exposure. So some baby foods have higher levels like rice-based snacks, juice, and sweet potatoes. Parents can make five safer baby choices, like avoiding these rice-based snacks and cereals, avoiding juices, and serving a variety of foods, and they can achieve around 80% less toxic metal residue within these foods.
Wow, now, that's not even making your baby food at home.
Well, that's a good point, but in 2022, we did a follow-up study to compare the toxic heavy metal contamination in homemade baby food versus store-bought food for babies. And actually, we found no evidence to suggest that homemade baby food has any lower heavy metal levels than store-bought brands. And the way the study was done is that volunteer shoppers went to a variety of stores across the nation and purchased like your organic sweet potato or a regular sweet potato in the produce section, and then purchased the analogous food in the baby food aisle. And then we had certified laboratories do the testing to look at the heavy metal contamination. So we found really that the heavy metal levels varied by food type, but not by who made the food, whether it be the company or the parent.
Wow. So make sure to have a variety of foods so you don't get saturated with one that has high levels of lead or cadmium or something.
Definitely. And really, I mean, the bottom line is that parents who are so busy, right, with all the tasks of just living, your jobs, raising the kids, really shouldn't have to worry about the safety of babies' meals and snacks when they're trying to make the right decision, going to the store or growing whatever they do. It's really a complicated problem, and it requires many aspects to solve it, right? And so the way that we talk about it at Healthy Babies Bright Futures is there's your kitchen solution, and then there's the country solution. So the kitchen solution is something that you can do personally. And until foods with low heavy metals are reliably available, parents just need to choose and prepare foods in ways that reduce exposures by following the guidance on our website. But the most important step is really to introduce and serve a variety of healthy foods, whether they're baby food brands or homemade, instead of serving the same food every day for a long time to accidentally cause a contamination. This varied diet avoids the contamination and increases our nutrition, right?
Right. And it's for all of us too. We should all try to eat lots of different foods.
Absolutely. And then secondly, we need to have this country solution. And so to date, the FDA has set limits for heavy metals in only two baby foods, infant raised cereal and juice. So this really does leave the burden on the parents to navigate the risks for all the other foods. So we need the FDA to establish and enforce protective limits for heavy metals in all foods consumed by babies and young children. And the FDA really should also require companies and growers to follow best practices to lower heavy metals in crops and processed ingredients. You may have heard the FDA does have a program now called Closer to Zero. This program resulted from the congressional follow-up to the media attention that Healthy Babies Bright Futures has announced, and they announced new action levels on lead in juice and toddler foods and the intention to do more to live up to the program's name. So this Closer to Zero program is in a comment period, and we are regularly submitting comments in hopes of truly getting closer to zero or zero in our foods that our children eat.
That's exciting. I didn't realize. Come on. Come on, FDA, you can do it.
That's right. And FDA does need all the cheerleading that it can get and all the pressure from all of us to get closer to zero when we actually should be at zero. Because we've said before, there's really no safe level of exposure to neurotoxins.
Mm-hmm. Every single little brain matters.
Absolutely.
So part of your mission at Healthy Babies Bright Futures is to empower lawmakers and corporate leaders to take a meaningful role in reducing exposures to neurotoxins. Can you talk about these partnerships?
Sure. I mean, we really strive to work in partnership with all types of partners because we're truly better together. And the foundation of these partnerships is often, you know, regular personal relationships, just getting to know and connecting with one another and finding common ground. So often in the nonprofit space, we get siloed because we're busy and there's other people doing the same thing. And so part of our mission is to just try to intentionally have conversations across spaces that we can join together as one. And just as important as doing our scientific work is doing the communication so people understand the research. So we have a very talented communications director named Paige Glidden, and she's able to get our reports that we talked about before with respect to the toxic heavy metals and baby foods in familiar and wide-ranging outlets like CNN, Consumer Reports, CBS News, and others. So this communication strategy is very critical because the coverage alerts parents to strategies to significantly reduce their exposure and increases pressure on the regulators like the FDA and congressional leaders to establish the limits that we need. So our partnerships really help us bring together resources and get the message out.
Yeah, and it starts conversations in those kitchens. You know, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
I learned recently that big African elephants, what they're deathly afraid of are honeybees, because the honeybees can get up their trunks and they have a special call that they do to warn people of honeybees. Oh. And I think of the nonprofits as the honeybees and the FDA as the elephant. And though you are small, you can be mighty. And so how do you empower the people to get involved and step into their power?
Well, I love that analogy, Kate, because I think sometimes, you know, we hear negative news and we have a sense of powerlessness, but really we are powerful. And that's what I tell our kids. It just starts with a voice, and we don't have to start big. We can just start small. So number one, having the confidence to feel like you can make a difference, starting at home by eating a variety of foods and to just talking about the issue. This was a frustrating issue for me as a parent because I just didn't know about these invisible neurotoxins. So just sharing that with a friend or a neighbor is a great start. Finding more resources, whether it be on our website or others, and then spreading that message, right? I just heard today, each one, reach one. And then taking that to your school or your church, your other community group to do a garden project like Salem, or to do resilient guards like South Portland, Maine, but so that we can all become more powerful together.
I love it. This is really public health. You're doing it, Healthy Babies, Bright Futures. And from that macro wide-angled perspective, can you say a bit more about the relationship between toxics and climate change?
Sure. And this is a connection that we are trying to build, because climate justice and environmental justice really go hand in hand. And these neurotoxic exposures that we've been talking about, like the carbon emissions, are both invisible and their effects aren't always immediate. But again, that doesn't mean they're not there. And so we're really working with individuals and city government because they can just drive this change that we need. This year, we're launching into some work to help practitioners at the city level link toxics reduction with climate metrics. And we really hope that these metrics will make it more easy for cities to quantify gains in reducing toxic exposures and carbon emissions. And I know that's getting a little wonky, but specifically, this means helping cities look at strategies to reduce their air toxics and also purchase products that are cleaner and safer for our health, but also have a lower carbon footprint. And so many cities have a climate action plan and they are required to count their carbon emissions. So this tool is a metric to not just look at carbon emissions, but also the reduction in toxicity with those changes in practices. Because our city staff are working so hard, they often don't have all the resources they need to truly do everything they want. And so our hope is that a strategy like this will allow co-benefits to be quantified in a way that the way that the city staff are already doing. So developing and testing these tools will be a big focus of our work this year. And we're also going to be working in partnership with our cities to make sure this is a meaningful tool.
It's so strategic. It's so truly helpful. There's just no way everybody can be educated and everybody can take action. But when you do it from higher up, it benefits everyone.
Absolutely.
Love that. I love the work you're doing. And I think city planning is a really cool job.
It is. There's a chance to be so creative. And the city staff also feel so collaborative because they are always looking to, as they say, steal ideas from other cities. And I love that. I came from the academic space where we didn't want to steal ideas. You were making your own ideas. But here it's like, why not? Let's just freely share for the betterment of all, because as we join our individual voices together, we become a more powerful one. And that's really what we're trying to do.
Yes. Ideally, this would come from on high, from the federal level, but we have not found that the FDA is all that up to the task. So people have come at it from smaller political systems and from trying to approach corporations to do the right thing, stop using Scotchgard and flame retardants and things like that. But part of my dream includes the federal government being invested in protecting all of us.
100% agree, Kate.
Yeah, just like a mama looking out for us. So, speaking of mama, if Mother Earth had a seat at the city planning table with you, what do you imagine she'd have us do to protect the health of babies?
Well, like I think all the mamas out there, mama just wants a break, right? She wants herself and all of her kids to have every advantage, starting with a clean and healthy environment. Like mama wants us to clean up our mess. And so in any way that we can, we just need to get started. And so that's what we try to support here.
I love that. Like, clean up after yourself.
I'm not speaking from the perspective of a mama three at all, right?
I'm sure you know. Well, to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the earth, if you're game.
Absolutely.
Just wondering, as a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outdoors?
I grew up in rural northeastern Ohio, and my grandparents had a big farm. And in the back of their farm was a woods. So whenever I went over to their house, I loved to go in the woods and just stroll around and look at all the plants.
Can you describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe?
Of course. Right now, I live in Boulder, Colorado, and I'm just 40 minutes away from Rocky Mountain National Park. I made a resolution this year to go up each month just to try a different trail. So a few weeks ago, I went to the top of Deer Mountain. It was still snowy, and I was stunned because when we got to the top, it was a 360-degree panoramic view of these granite mountains with white caps and the blue Colorado sky. I did feel awe, Kate.
I think you have a lot of access to awe in Colorado. It's such a beautiful state.
It is gorgeous. We don't have the coastline like you have in Maine, which is another place that's amazing to explore those like tidal creatures. And I love doing that as well.
What's one thing you're currently wondering about in nature?
Well, I'm just wondering about the state of our pollinators and how in an urban environment we can all do better in our green space around our homes to protect habitat for the pollinators.
I love the bees.
Absolutely.
And finally, what is your favorite baby animal?
I've always loved the baby chick. They're so cute, and I just, that's my favorite. That's
Fluffy and yellow.
right.
Kyra, you are smartly tackling this issue of healthy human development from a wider systemic level. Thank you for using all your knowledge and resources to keep babies safe, truly making brighter futures for all. And thank you for being my guest today on What Mama Wants.
Thanks for having me, Kate.